Okay, today is Wednesday, April 18th, Yom HaZikaron. We're in the midst of, this is the Chumash here, we're in the midst of Bereshit, Perek Ted Zayin, Pasuk Dalad. Okay, Rabotai. We are up to Bereshit, Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Dalad. At the beginning of the Perek, the Torah reported that Sarai did not have any children. She suggested to Avram that he marry Hagar in order to possibly build from her. So she gave Avram Hagar. And now the Torah reports, Vayavo el Hagar Vatahar. He had relations with Hagar and she got pregnant. Vatere ki harata. And she, Hagar, noticed that she became pregnant. Vatekal gvirta be'eneha. And her master became cheap in her eyes. Lesson, exactly. So, okay, let me just read a couple of psukim. Vatomer Sarai el Avram, Chamasi Alecha. My, that which has been taken from me is your fault. Alecha. Anochi natati shivchati b'chekecha. I gave you my servant as a wife. Vatere ki harata. And she noticed that she got pregnant. Bo'eikal be'eneha. And I was ridiculed in her eyes. Yishpot Hashem b'ni u'b'enecha. May God serve as a judge to punish you for that which you are guilty of. Yishpot Hashem b'ni u'b'enecha. Yeah, she's blaming Avram right now. We'll see how to read this. That's the simple pshat. Simple pshat is Yishpot Hashem b'ni u'b'enecha, because I believe that Hagar's behavior is your fault. We'll see why it's his fault. We'll see you in a second. So as always, let's start with Rashi in Pasuk Dalad. Vayavo el Hagar Vatahar. Says Rashi, in the name of the Midrash, Mebi'ah Rishona. She was able to conceive based on the first time that they had relations. The Gemara believes, which is the source of this Midrash, that under ordinary circumstances, husband and wife who have relations for the very first time will not conceive from that relation. I'm sure there have been situations where they have succeeded in, but the norm typically is that you don't get pregnant from the first encounter. And here, she is getting, and those who explain Rashi or explain the Midrash claim that that it didn't have to say the word vatahar. Could have said vayavo el hagar, vatera ki harata. He had relations with Hagar, and she noticed that she was pregnant. Why does it have to say vatera, vayavo el hagar, vatahar, then vatera ki harasa? This leads the Midrash, cited in the Gemara, that that she conceived immediately. She conceived immediately. And that in and of itself led to the degradation of Sarai in Hagar's eyes. Vatekal givirta be'eneha. Her master, Hagar, her master, Sarai, was cheapened in her eyes due to the fact that she got pregnant right away. And let's see how Rashi handles this. Vatekel givirta be'eneha. Okay. says Rashi, Amra, she said, Sarai zu ein sitara kigluya. Her inner makeup, I don't mean makeup with blush and things like that, her inner makeup, her inner character is not the way she appears in public. Mar'e atzma ki'ilu hi tzadeket, she portrays the image that she is a righteous woman. Ve'ene tzadeket, and she's far from a tzadek. Why? Shelo zachta leheirayon kol hashinim halal. She was not privileged to get pregnant all of these years that she is married to Avram. Va'ani, and me, nit'abarti mebi'a rishoyna. I got pregnant the first time I slept with him. So I must be a bigger tzaddik, a righteous person than Sarai. And obviously, if that was the tone and tenor of the conversation, and whether it was exactly this or not is not really critical. The mere fact that she got pregnant in and of itself, regardless as to the religious commitment or religious character of Hagar versus Sarai, she had something to ridicule Sarai with. I got pregnant right away. You didn't get pregnant right away. But according to this midrash, she rubs it in. Not only did I get pregnant, but I got pregnant because I'm a holier person than you are. And you only outwardly generated the impression, klapechutz, but God, who knows deep down, therefore God did not allow you to get pregnant up until this particular time. Up until this time. So these are very serious accusations that Sarai hurls at Avram. She is simply making making fun of me. And in fact, if you go to page number 2 of the handout for a second, in the first bracketed remark, the Malbim adds one other twist. Vatekal givirta be'eneha. Ki chashva, that Hagar assumed, she'achar sheharata yatza merishuta. Once she had having a child, what happens? She can't be what? Any longer a slave. That's impossible. That's point number one. And then he echoes Rashi's point, Vigam nidmela shehi tzadeket yoter misara. She presented herself as a greater righteous person, even greater than Sarah. Achar shaharta tekev. As she became pregnant immediately, she went on blabbing and claiming, I am the greater tzaddik. But, and either, as we'll see Sarah's reaction and Avram's reaction in a second, either of the Malbim's possibilities are possible. That the ridicule was based on the fact either that I got pregnant first, or the ridicule is based on the fact that she, Hagar, is claiming, I'm no longer your servant. I don't have to serve you any longer. We'll see why in a couple of seconds, and how Avram responds is an indication that the Malbim's analysis might be correct. That the greater, the primary reason for rubbing it in Sarah's eyes was due to the fact that that Hagar is no longer considering herself a servant any longer. Not considering herself a servant any longer. And in fact, there is a halacha, a gemara, that seems to support this notion. That when you have a Gentile servant in the house, the halacha allows an Eved Ivri to marry this woman, and all of the children now are slaves unto the master. So you have a master with an Eved Ivri who owns a Jewish slave, and he also happens to own a Shivcha Kena'anit, a non-Jewish or a partial Jewish, but she's basically a Gentile. And once she's working for him, the halacha states, it's right in the Pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, in Shemot chapter 21, that the master is allowed to give her to the slave for the purpose of producing babies, and all of those babies happen to what? Happen to belong to him as slaves. Now, there is one opinion, however, that says that she can only have one child via that slave, because the din is, after she has a baby, she's no longer a slave. That, like, completes the conversion. Don't forget, as I've told you on many occasions, the halakha never allows a Gentile employee to live in the house. Doesn't allow it. If you're going to hire a Gentile, in the time of the Gemara or before, time of Tanakh, it meant acquiring a slave, that person has to undergo conversion and accept all of the mitzvot of the Torah, with the exception of mitzvot shehazman grama. Mitzvot that are time-bound, she would be exempt, or he would be exempt. If the slave chooses not to accept the offer, you have to sell that slave to a Gentile. You can't keep a Gentile slave as a Gentile in your house, because the halakha is concerned about, doesn't say it in the Chumash, but it's a halakha, that's the way they treated it, the halakha is concerned about the influence that such a person might have on your own children. You know, the Gentile can eat whatever he or she desires. So, she's going to bring in a Big Mac, and your son says, I also want to have a Big Mac. She doesn't have to observe Shabbos. Actually, if she's an Evet, she does have to observe Shabbos, but you can't tell her to do malacha for you, but for herself she can definitely do. So therefore, you have to undergo this process of conversion. And there are several ways to terminate this status. If he marries, he can marry this woman and complete, you can free her. If you free her, she becomes a complete Jewess. She goes to the mikveh a second time.
Oh, what? With the conversion.
With the, right. She initially, the conversion is like a halfway conversion. She's obligated in most mitzvot, but she can still not marry within the fold. Only person she can have relations with is another slave. But she can't marry anybody yet within Am Yisrael. Once she's freed, she becomes a full-fledged Jewess, she immerses in the mikveh again, and she's now a regular convert. Regular convert. Yes?
But if the Eved Ivri to whom she's being married is an indentured servant who is supposed to be free
after 6 years, that's who we're talking about.
Okay, so he may elect to stay if he...
And what happens if he elects to stay? We're going to pin him.
She leaves with him if he does not elect to stay.
No, she stays.
She's his wife?
She's not his wife. He had relations with her, but she's not his wife. The burden of responsibility for providing food and the credit card for Nordstrom is on the master, not on this slave. Right. That's correct. So, under those circumstances, the fact that she gave birth to a child might have been halachically supported that a slave, that's how some claim what's running through her mind, that, you know, now that I have a child, I'm no longer a slave any longer, I become a free person. So that's what the Malbim is trying to alert us to. Let's continue. And obviously this is bothering Sarai to no extent, as we would expect her to be very, very upset. But we don't necessarily have to expect that Hagar has to rub it in her face. But apparently she was.
Was that why she didn't let Sarah raise him? Like technically,
we'll see what she's going to do in 2 seconds.
Right.
We'll see. So Avram says, Sarai says to Avram in Pasuk A, Sarai said, Chamasi Olecha. Now, what does Hamas mean? What?
Violence,
theft, right? Kimala ha'aretz Hamas, the Torah we learned in Parshas Noach. All forms of thievery existed in the generation which God decided to eliminate in the Mabul. So it's a little on you. What do we mean? My violence, my theft? It's a very difficult expression. Chamasi Alecha. So there are several interpretations, and then we'll get to the big issue in a second. Says Rashi, Chamasi Alecha, Chamas He'asui Li. The violence that has been heaped upon me.
It's your fault.
Chamasi. The violence that has been heaped upon me is not my fault, it's your fault. Alecha. We'll see why in a second. So, now, no one is ever going to suggest that Hagar physically abused Sarah. And Hamas normally means, as you translate it correctly, violence, but more closely, it's related to theft. So who is being stolen in this story? Who's being stolen from Sarai? Avram is being stolen. What's happening? You gave birth right away. That's the thing my husband craved for all of these years. And in 2 minutes, you get pregnant. He's not going to have any respect for me any longer. So I will have wound up to be second fiddle in this house, and therefore you, Avram, are responsible for what? For having stolen yourself from myself to Sarai, to Hagar. Chamasi Alecha. And Alecha ani matil ha'onesh. I am not going to say to God that Hagar ought to be punished, even though she was the one who physically is the one who's ribbing her, ridiculing her. But I'm not blaming Hagar. I'm blaming you. Not because you had a child right away. Look what Rashi says. Kishehit palauta lehakadosh baruchu. Ma titen li. Ve'anochi holech ariri. When God said to Abraham, Sicharcha harbei ma'od, your reward is enormous. This was after the battles of the four kings and the five kings. And what was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's, what was Abraham's response to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Ma titen li. What could you possibly give to me if I'm going to remain barren? V'hanochi holech ariri. Says Sarai to Abraham, why was that in the singular? Why didn't you say Matiten lanu va'anachnu holchim aririm? You're only concerned about yourself. Had you prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on my behalf, I perhaps would have been the one giving birth at this particular minute. And therefore, the onesh, Rashi learns that alecha doesn't mean I'm blaming you for what? I'm blaming you for what? For Hagar stealing you. Alecha means I want the punishment should be addressed to you, and not to whom? Not to Hagar. I'm not blaming her. I'm blaming you more than I'm blaming her. That's how Rashi learns. Chamas he'asui li, alecha ani matil ha'onesh. Lo hitpalalta ela olecha. Haya lecha lehitpalel al shenenu. Vahayiti ani nifkedet imach. I would have what? I would have been remembered by God as on your account. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu listened to you, yeah.
But when Abraham says, Mati Ken Li, he's only responding to Hashem saying, Scharcha, you in the singular. Singular. I mean, God started that conversation.
Oh, okay, but maybe the context I understand, because Sarah didn't participate in the battle. It was Avram who participated in the battle, and to that, HaKadosh Baruch says, Schar Chaha B'Meod. But once he's already asking for a child, she felt he was insensitive and didn't take her feelings into consideration. That's Rashi's interpretation. Take a look, however, at page number 3 for a minute. Chizkuni has a totally different read of what's happening here. Now, Hagar feels that she has really been elevated in Abraham's eyes, and as a result, she's not planning to do any work for Sarai. So take a look at Chizkuni. Chamasi, she'oseli shifchati Hagar. You know what's being stolen from me? Page number four. Page 4, on the right-hand side of page. Chamosi, she'ose li shifchati Hagar, she'eina rotza lisham sheni. She does not want to work for me any longer. And who owned her?
Sarah.
So if Sarah owns her, now that she's not working for her, it's as if what? What did you do? You're involved in theft. I have now. In order for me now, when I want to get somebody to wash the floors, I'm going to have to hire somebody else. So you are guilty of theft by having created an atmosphere where my servant is no longer feeling compelled to work on my behalf. She thinks he's a big rabbitson already, and as a result, you are stealing from me. Kacha lomed ha'chizkuni. Third interpretation, offered by Smarno, right below, offered by Smarno. Chamasi olecha. Shehaya licha ligorba acharei shehi ishticha umakila oti mipnei shehit abra mimech. I'm the master and she's the servant, and she's ridiculing me. What should have happened? You should have opened up your mouth and protected my dignity. You hear these types of statements coming out of her mouth? It's your fault. Your fault because you failed to respond. To stand by idly is, you know, one of the worst things. One of the worst possible things. This is a famous statement, you know. What? Right, that we're never going to be, with Medinat Yisrael, we're not going to be victims any longer. I forgot who said it. Not going to be victims anymore like we were during the Shoah. We're not going to be perpetrators of any crimes. And the worst is, which now, we're never going to be bystanders. Something happens to any Jew any place in the world, we are going to react. We're not standing by any longer as somebody is attacked because they are Jewish. You, Avram, should have responded. And he failed to do so. And therefore, she correctly is blaming Avram. And this is amplified. Just look across the page. The Radak says, the Radak writes, Vatomer chamasi alecha, hachamas sha'ani lokachat meshiv chasi. He translates chamas like the what? The ridicule that I am taking from what? From my servant, Alechahu. Ki ani litovatcha nitkavanti. I only had your best interest in mind. Shenisati alach kidei shiyeh lecha zera mimena. Ve'ata nikloti be'eneha. I have been ridiculed in her eyes. Va'ata lo tachush, you couldn't care less. Ve'lo tiyater ota. Tiyaser ota, you're not going to rebuke her. Va'ani lichvodcha. Eini rotze lidota. I could have struck back myself, but I have too much dignity for you. So I am not going to go ahead and what? And embarrass you that I'm jealous and I'm going to go ahead and take revenge myself. You should have stood up for me. And you didn't stand up for me. I'm blaming you. So there are a pretty wide span of what's happening here, what the word Hamas actually refers to. Yes?
I'm getting the impression somehow, I don't know if anybody else is, that Sarai considered Hagar to be almost non-existent. In other words, if she were to give Hagar, not that she gave her to Abraham with a great deal of respect for Hagar, but if she gave Hagar to Abraham, she would sort of recede into the background, and any child would be Sarai's. She considered her so inconsequential. And we have a feeling that she probably didn't treat Hagar all that well before, because she didn't treat her all that well later. So maybe she used her and didn't think of her as a person, as a mother, and now all of a sudden she's showing up as a person in her own right. And that is throwing the monkey wrench.
That's very plausible. Very plausible. Not saying no. Now the pasuk concludes with the phrase Yishpot Hashem Beini Ubeinecha. So take a look at first Rashi, then I'm going to send you to a Gemara. Beini Ubeinecha. Take a look at Rashi on the caption Beini Ubeinecha. Kol Beini Ubeinecha Shebemikra Chaser. Every time that the word Beini and Beinecha appears in Tanakh, the second Yud after the Nun doesn't exist. Doesn't exist. In Tanakh. Anybody remember Beini Ubeinecha, which was just read this past Shabbat in the Haftarah? In the Haftarah, this past Shabbos. We read Machar Chodesh. So Yonatan says, right, that we're making an oath, Beini Ubeinecha, that nothing should ever get in between us, and so on and so forth. It's always written without a yud. Yes. Vizeh Malay. And this one happens to be with a yud. This one happens to be with a yud. Right, that's the way it's going to read. Says Rashi, Kariba uveinayich. Not beinecha, but beinayich. Who is she talking to about? Who? Yes, Hagar. May God judge between me and Hagar. Not me and what? And Abraham. So what happened? Shehechnisa ayin hara b'ibura shel Hagar. She placed a curse upon Hagar as she got pregnant. Vehipila ubra. And she lost the child. Hu shehamalach omer lahagar, hinach hara. Lo and behold, you've just gotten pregnant in Pasuk Yud Aleph. That's what the Malach said. Hinach hara. Lo and behold, you've gotten pregnant. What do you mean, gotten pregnant? It says it in Pasuk Bet that she's gotten ogilo, that she's gotten pregnant. So therefore, the Midrash says she lost a child. She lost a child, and then she got pregnant a second time. V'hu mivaser la, and he, the angel, is informing her that she will get pregnant. Melamed shehepila herayon harishon. This teaches us that she lost the first child. That's how Rashi, in the name of the Midrash, reinterprets the pasuk. It's a very difficult read. Tell me why I say it's a difficult read. Read the whole pasuk. Tell me why it's a difficult read. Tell me why. You can tell me why. You, I know you can. Correct. The whole pasuk, the focus is upon whom? Avram. Now all of a sudden, in midstream, at the end, he says, oh, I'm talking to Sarah or about Sarah, about Hagar. Very unusual read. Very unusual. But Rashi suggests it. However, the Gemara, and I'm going to ask you to look at the Gemara in a second, has a different understanding, and Sarah was criticized by God for her statement of Yishtot Hashem Behi Ubehem. Sarah was harshly criticized. Let's take a look at page number three. Page number three. This is a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah on Daf Tet Zayin Amud Bet. And the Gemara says, where I bracketed it for you, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Shlosha Devarim Mazkirin Avonotav Shel Adam. Three things, if you do, God remembers your transgression and is always going to punish when you do any one of these things. Then the next statement will be, there are four things which, if you engage in them, God will rip up his plan for the year for you. It koreyak zardino, good things that if you do those four, and that's why it's here in Rosh Hashanah, because it's talking about how the books are opened on Rosh Hashanah, so you have to do tshuva and so on and so forth. So he says, Eluhein, here are the three things. Kir natui. Kir natur, a wall that is bent over, about to what? Back to collapse. And you decide to do what? To walk underneath it. So, the Rabbani Shlomo is going to protect me. Nothing, I got nothing to worry about. God doesn't like stupid people. And that you think that you are worthy enough that what should happen, that a miracle should occur, that if it would collapse when you are there, nothing's going to happen to you. That's correct. Ain't some chenalanes. And if you claim this and say, I have nothing to worry about, then under those circumstances, God's going to remember that. Number two, iyun tefillah. Iyun tefillah, we're familiar with that phrase. It's in the Berchot HaShachar. It's part of the Braita, which we quote. Elu devarim she'adam ochel peroseim ba'olam hazeh v'hakeren kayemet l'olam haba. And one of those things is the iyun tefillah. That's not what it means here. Iyun tefillah there means study and knowing what you're saying during davening. That's a very positive trait. Here, iyun tefillah means I pray to God, and I know He's going to answer me. I know it. Okay. So if you think you know it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to show you're not so smart. No guarantees for me anything. And the third one is Moser Din Al Chaveiro. Somebody who asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take care of his friend on his behalf. Rabbi Yishon, I think that person deserves something. So, I'm not going to do it. That's exactly what the comment is going to be made. And we're going to look at how the Gemara quotes it. So, look at the next line. The Omar Rabbi Oven, Kol HaMoser din al chavero, hu ne'enash tchila. Anybody who places judgment upon God's seat and say, God, take care of that person. What's going to happen? You're going to be punished before them. Before them. What did it? Shine emar. Vatomer sarai el Avram chamosi olecha. And yishpot Hashem beini ubein chai. It's like, just the Gemara doesn't, the Medrash often does, or the Gemara doesn't quote the whole pasuk, but expect you to look at the whole pasuk. Uksiv, and it is written in chapter 25 of Sefer Bereshit, Vayavo Avraham lispod lisara velivkota. Avram came to eulogize and to cry over Sarah's demise. What does the Gemara mean? That's correct. And not just on, many, many years before Avram died. One would have expected that one could have simply said, those were the years that were allocated to Sarai. Does anybody know that how many years you're allocated? Most of us don't know. But so we could have said, Sarai was allocated 127 years. Me'a shana, v'esrim shana, v'sheva shanim. Shnei chayei Sarai. However, the Gemara is saying, no. Sarai should have lived when much longer, at least as long as Avram lived. No reason not to. No reason not to. And why didn't she live as long? Not because the Medrash says that what happened after Akedat Yitzchak. The Satan came and said that why? That Yitzchak is being sacrificed on the Mizbeach, and she had a heart attack and died. No. That could have been the method which HaKadosh Baruch Hu used to kill her. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu denied her X number of years because you called upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu to serve as a judge to punish Hagar. Or to punish Avram, depending on who you think she's directing her anger at. But don't bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into this picture. Yishpot Hashem beini ubeinecha. In which case, the beinecha, according to this Gemara, is not Hagar, as Rashi said it, but it's being consistent. It's always Avram. And may God punish you, Abe, because you didn't respond, you didn't defend me. As a result, she dies first. That's this particular Gemara, and uses it as a classic example of where somebody is Moser Din Al Chavero. Where you think you know everything, what's right and what's wrong, and she's guilty as charged, and hence HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you now have to what? Have to punish. God doesn't like that. Okay. Why only these three things does God remember? I could have thought of a couple of other things, but that's what the Gemara says in any event, and many refer to this as to what happens here in relationship to Sarah. And some of them, some people who disagree with this association, even though it's a Gemara, it's an Agadic Gemara, but anyhow, some say that doesn't make any sense, because which Pasuk in Bereshit chapter 25 would have been a better pasuk than the one that this Gemara cited. So look at the beginning of Parshat Chayei Sarah. You'll see it'll stare you in the face, which would have been a better, stronger proof to support the premise of this Gemara. It's the beginning of Chayei Sarah. What other phrase of that opening drama would you have cited to support the premise of this Gemara? Not the pasuk. What? What? No. Here the pasuk focuses on Avram. That Avram went to what? To eulogize her. Okay, so maybe you're punishing Avram. But that's not what the Gemara wants to know. What phrase? It's two words, three words, four words. If you want to indicate that Sarah had X number of years taken from her. Okay, that's someone else suggests, but there's something even more powerful. Vatamat Sarah B'kiryat Arba. If you want to tell us that Sarah is being punished because she asked what? She asked that HaKadosh Baruch Hu punish Hagar, so say, Vatamat Sarah. Sarah died. She was scheduled to live X number of years additionally, and she didn't. Why do I cite the pasuk where the subject of that pasuk is not Sarah, but rather what? Avram. Avram came to eulogize his wife Sarah. Okay, I'm not saying it doesn't imply that Sarah died. Of course it did. But many feel very uncomfortable with this Gemara because there was an obvious phrase which should have been the proof text for this, Vatamat Sarah. And you'll ask, what's the big deal about people always die? Answer, Sarai was scheduled to live as long as Avram did, or at least close to that number, and she actually lived. He outlived her by 67 years. 67 years. So that's a long time. But that's what this particular Gemara feels. Sarah was wrong in saying, Yishpot Hashem beini ubeinecha. Yishpot Hashem beini ubeinecha. Then, what was that?
How could Sarah have handled the situation differently without being punished?
She could have said, I'm angry at you, Avram, and that's it. She didn't have to invoke God to punish somebody. That's not our business, to ask God to punish somebody. No. We are, according to this Gemara, we are never permitted to ask for punishment. That's God's thing. You can describe your distress. You know what? These people are making life miserable for me. Rabbeinu Shalom, do what you, whatever you... But you can't ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please punish such an individual.
But isn't it also ironic that didn't Rashi say that Abraham didn't ask Hashem if he should do it? You know, it says Shema B'Kolah, but he didn't ask Hashem if this was a good idea, that they just did it?
So
now she's
right.
Bringing Hashem into this.
Right.
To be bad, to do bad.
Right.
She didn't say yes, Hashem.
If she'd marry Hagar. Okay. Good. That's true. That's true.
She didn't get a warning, though.
No, what?
If she didn't get a warning, how would she know she's doing something wrong?
That's a good question. How do you know? Who got her a warning? So you'd have to assume that somewhere during the course of their lifetime, somebody whispered in their ears that it's inappropriate to do so. That's a good question. It's a good question. But you can't really ask that question about, you know, the avot, because we have no idea what they really knew, what they were told. So it's often what the Gemara does, it's apply standards that we know of and then retroactively applies them to, and biblical scholars, that's one of the things that they hate most. They hate when we take criteria introduced by the Talmud and say, oh, the Avot had to live like that. The Avot never heard of those things. Yes?
So, are you allowed to say then that they should die without invoking Hashem?
Maybe.
We do it all the time.
Yes. As long as you don't ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu as if you are the one who already conducted the trial and found them guilty, Rabbi Hashem, all your job is to do what? Is to punish. Yes, you can. I'm not saying it's the best thing, though, to wish somebody ill, but, it's, you know, as long as you don't ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to get involved, that's, according to this Gemara, it's fine. It's okay. Yeah. Now, take a look at page number 5. I bracketed the Chizkuni because he teaches us an interesting point. Now, In light of the fact that Rashi tells us what he expected from Yishpot Hashem b'nei u'b'neicha, should this word have always been written mole and here it should have been chaser, or should it always be chaser and here it's mole? If the Gemara that I just mentioned to you is right, which one should it be?
Always chaser.
It should always be mole and here would be chaser. And what lesson would I learn from the fact that the word is chaser? Somebody's life is being chaser, nechsar. Somebody's life is being reduced. So the imagery of what would happen is communicated by the omission of a letter. And the omission of a letter is called chaser. Why would this word be chaser? Because, shnot chaye sarah hayu chaserim. But it happens to be the exact reverse. The word is always written chaser. Here it's the only time that it's written what? Malay. How does an extra yud now come to symbolize a reduction in years? That's a question which a lot of people ask on this Gemara in light of the way the pasuk appears. Yishpot Hashem b'nei u'b'neicha. Yeah. Perhaps. That's possible. Not saying no. So take a look at now Chizkuni. On the third line. Now Chizkuni agrees that the subject of this phrase is not Hagar, but rather Avram. And he writes in the second line, Yishpot Hashem b'ni u'b'neicha sha'ani choshesh l'chvodcha. I am very concerned about your dignity, ve'encha choshesh lichvodi, but you couldn't care less about my honor. Ubeinecha nakud, pirush Rashi, kol ubeinecha shebemikra chaser v'zemalei. Karibe ubeinayich. The way you can read it is between me and whom? And Hagar and Sarai. Kilomar, in other words, kol ubeinecha chaserim yud bein hanun bein akaf. Every other time this word appears, there's an absent yud between the nun and the kaf. V'zem alei. Now he answers, ubeinecha. Kol tevot nekudot shebatorah. Every single time that a word is any time you have words in the Torah where there might be a difference as to how you read it, mesupakot hayu biyado shel Ezra hasofer. Ezra couldn't figure out who the subject of that phrase was. What he's asking us, how do you get chaserot and malei? Do you think that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote a Sefer Torah missing or adding a yud? Says Chizkuni, that's not what happened. There is a word in the text, and here the word is ubeinecha, and Ezra HaSofer, Ezra the scribe, is not sure, is the subject matter supposed to be Avram, in which ubeinecha is 100% correct, or is it supposed to be, the subject should be between Sarah and Hagar? So what did Ezra propose, claimed Chizkuni? What is the correct reading of the text? What's the correct reading? Who is the subject of Ube? Who, let God judge between whom and whom?
Me
and Hagar. Well, the only way to alert the reader to that is to do what? Put another yud. So you will read it ubeinayich. So Chizkuni is making this startling claim. I don't know if it's so startling because I'm not, since this is not my specialty, that the malei and chaser was added by design by Ezra to convey a different reading of that which might have been assumed had it not appeared the way it appears in the text. And what else helps change a meaning sometimes? Besides the malay and the chaser, what else might change?
The trup, right?
That's correct. The trup will... So let's just continue reading. Kol tevot nekudot sheba Torah misupakot hayu biyado shel Ezra. Amar, im yavo Moshe Rabbeinu ve'omer li mitnei ma kasavte et elu. If Moshe shall ever come to me with a claim, hey, Ezra, what you do here? I didn't write this with this yud. Omer lo, I'm going to say to him, Kfar nakadati aleihem. I put the nikudot also to make it read properly. It's not to be read as what? Uveinecha, but rather what? Uveinayich. V'im omer li, if he says to me, Lama nakadata aleihem, why did you make vowel sounds when I, Moshe, didn't put any vowel sounds? Omer lo, Hare lo michaktim. Okay, I haven't erased it yet. What will I do? What am I going to do? I'll just erase it and make the change. So he plays a little game. This little story says that Ezra is going to play a little game with Moshe when he attacks him, that he did not record the Sefer Torah in the manner in which Moshe presented it, which in and of itself is shocking. One thing that we have taken pride in is that it takes so long to write a Sefer Torah. The only way you're allowed to write a Sefer Torah is by copying it from what? From an existing Sefer Torah. Can't look at a Chumash, can't look at anything. And that has preserved the integrity of the text, going back for generation to generation. Okay, if it went all the way back to Ezra, it's also a pretty good accomplishment. Don't forget, Ezra was at the time of beginning of Bayit Sheni, right after Churban Bayit Rishon, as the Jews are on the way to Bavel, and then coming back, that's a long time ago. So it's retained its integrity for a very long time. But our belief is that the Sefer Torah really maintains its integrity all the way back to Moshe. And Chizkuni is not telling us that. And that's why if you look at any Sefer Torah, there is only one difference between Sfardim and Ashkenazim. One letter difference. It was in last week's Parsha, Parsha Shemini. The word Daka, that appears in the middle of Parsha Shemini, is written by the Sfardim with a Hey at the end, Daka, Dalet Kaf Hey. By us it's written with an Aleph, Dalet Kaf Aleph. I have no idea how that happened. But every other letter in the Torah is exactly the same in every single Sefer Torah.
So we have Kriyat Ktiv.
Correct. But the Kriyat Ktiv is in exactly in all... Ah, that's the same question. Did Moshe Rabbeinu write a word and tell us to pronounce it differently? It says one thing and you read it some other way? Unlikely. Most say that who made that change? Ezra made that change as well. Why did he make that change? I don't know. So you'll speak to the Tanakh scholars within our community, and there are plenty of them. You can go to Moshe Bernstein, Ari Mermelstein, they'll tell you all about these things, about Ezra's right to manipulate the text. And we read words, even though the letters are completely different, we read it differently. And that's also a tradition, not from Moshe Rabbeinu, but from Ezra. It's a little difficult to understand why he did it, but people might know about it. But Chizkuni claims that the Yeserot and Chaserot follow this particular pattern. So we've seen what some of the arguments of Sarai was to Avram, whether or not he's angry at her or angry at Avram, That's a subject of dispute, and we will see next week. Hold on a second. Next week, I'm going to NORPAC next week. How many people can come on Tuesday at 12:30? How many cannot come Tuesday 12:30? Okay. Okay. What?
If you're on the bus.
Yeah. Does it make a difference if I ask for Thursday? Thursday 12:30? Any more? Any less? No? Not good Thursday, huh?
It's good.
Okay. Yes. It'll be in the weekly brief. Definitely. It'll be in the brief whether the share will be canceled or Tuesday. I'll let you know. Welcome. Ugh.